Well, when something like an earthquake happens, you get movements of, you know, meters at a time, within seconds or parts of seconds. And when volcanoes erupt, you get tons and tons of rocks and ash or lava, which is the beginning of a rock, thrown out within seconds or minutes or hours, but at incredibly fast rate.
And erosion, of course,
depends on where you are in the Atlantic,
kind of
things are drifting apart.
That is, if you have a river or a stream where rocks are continuously
apart,
being eroded off the mountains and carried or transported down to the sea.
And other places,
eventually.
Of course,
so
things then are compressed.
Of course, single rocks move in a sense like that, but if you're speaking about the movement in or of the crystals inside a rock and this very plastic deformation of rocks themselves, then it is always in a bigger context. It's always to do with mountains and eventually they deform. But yes, of course, we do have movement of single rocks in erosion. But when I think of the life of stones or what makes them grow and form, then it is something which is in a far bigger environment.
So you've got this great big reservoir.
Well, the spinning of the earth and the heat in the centre of the earth and things like that. So that's where the life
it all
is
starts off there. So
the stones
thing,
evolve,
it cools down
come
on the edges,
from.
And then you
what
get
happens on the surface is basically.
The first process is just one of cooling down from a molten state into a
tremendous
motor
of stone.
And depending on how fast it goes, you get different sorts of rocks. So if you have a very long time for things to cool down, then the minerals, so the symbols, the components of a rock, have a lot more time to grow. Then you get things like granite. And if you cool it down very fast, you get things that are fine grain, because the minerals don't have time to grow as such. It's more like glassy. And once it's at the surface, you get either erosion processes, so it's ground down into sand or clay or whatever, or then recompressed, so you get sandstone and shales and things like that. Or then it gets buried, usually pressed down and then compressed and heated up, and then again you have the situation where the minerals can grow. But it's usually the minerals growing and not the rock. So you have a great big reservoir of molten rock, and all the time these stones are running through cycles where they get molten and then melted and then cooled down and ground up and melted again and heated up again and all sorts of things. So it's the minerals that grow, and for mineral growth depends a lot on chemistry and the heat and the pressure at the time and how long it has. So if you get great big rubies or diamonds or something, they're things that grew under special conditions, so they had a lot of time and they had the right sort of components available, and that's what you get in the end. It's just a cycle of processes. You get a bit of dust, cosmic dust, that falls onto the earth, but that starts off as dust, so it probably enters the cycle at some stage, but usually, yes, I think it's always the same. Although there are some rocks where you can tell part of the story. So a sandstone, you know, it must have been ground down, and you know it must at one stage have been, the sand must have come from somewhere, and then it was ground down, and then it was recompressed, and you get your sandstone. And there are some, for instance, metamorphic rocks, or rocks that have been heated up and compressed, where you can see different stages of metamorphism, where you can see if you've got a heating up, great deal of activity, which means that a lot of rocks
get pushed down and then get
lifted up again, and very high-grade metamorphic rocks
or
have been
very
different deformation. You don't tend to get that as much in the Andes,
but of course as soon as it's melted right down
again, into lava
that have just come up to cool
it, and perhaps been covered up a bit and has very, very low grade metamorphism, but not much more. You do get higher in some places, but not as a general thing, not in the same way you do in other mountain ranges, and I'm not sure anyone really knows how it's happening, which is fascinating. And what we're trying to find out is when which movements occurred and how much uplift was going on, and then leave some of it to the geophysicists to find out why things were lifted up, because it means you must be, because you're not shoving things together, it means that things must be happening underneath, sort of, where you can't see it.
Meaning the planet down deep is extremely hot, that's why we have volcanism, and we have big, what we call convection cells in the deeper parts of the Earth,
really understands where the process.
Hot material
the activity,
is being brought up to the surface.
You can see the erosion going on, and because it's very jagged and rugged.
Continues horizontally along the surface,
and
on in these or on these convection cells we have what we call the continental drift.
And as I said, you can also see that a lot of things have been where they were for millions of years. It must have happened in a very short time, geologically speaking. But I mean, a million years is nothing to a rock. And I think it's quite impressive if you think moving 1,000 meters in a million years, you still have to calculate what that means. What kind of movement you're doing per year in that case. And then you can see things like the rocks are tilted, so the layers all dip to one side, and then you can see that after they were tilted, they were folded, for instance. And because you can see which rocks were tilted and which rocks weren't, you can sort of estimate the age of the tilting. It must have been, I don't know, 20 million years ago. Something like that. Then it means that all that's happened since then is has all been in that last sort of time space. So which means there's a lot of activity going on. And then there are things like volcanoes and earthquakes and everything you can see and feel very, very much. So I sort of have the feeling that everything is moving all the time. You fly over them and you have a
dangerous environment.
Not see erosion going on, whereas in
extremely
the Alps,
threatening, but it is a constant danger which is always there. And it's, but you have to get used to it, and you have to trust your luck, sort of thing. Because what I try to do is sort of not provoke it. I mean, you don't do foolish things. You try to keep on the safe side, because if you provoke it too often, you're going to have an accident.